In this series that we're in, talking about the life of Joseph, we've been saying that Joseph starts off as a bratty 17-year-old kid, but eventually, at the end of the story, ends up to be a wise, discerning leader that saves his family, saves his nation, saves even his guest nation of Egypt. He's the kind of person that you'd want running your company, managing your assets, but you'd also want him to invite him over for dinner sometime because he's a person of integrity and kindness as well as exceptional abilities. And so in this passage we're looking at today, so we've seen him, we've talked about the brokenness that he's gone through in his family. We've talked about him being kidnapped basically and sold into slavery, and he ends up a household slave in Potiphar's house, and things are starting to go better, but then he, Potiphar's wife's selfish ambitions bring him down, and he gets framed, and he gets sent to prison. So he's trying to get up, but he falls back down further. But in today's passages, he goes from the prison to the palace. He finally gets out, and he's on the way up. And so we're going to read two chapters, which is a lot of text, but what ties this together is that there's three dreams. Three people have dreams, and these dreams are troubling. They create all these problems and questions for them. And Joseph is the one that brings the answers. And Joseph's answers are what bring him actually from the prison to the palace. So the three points we're going to be looking at today are the search for answers, the person of answers, and the message of answers. So I'm going to read Genesis 40 for us, and then Amanda Miller is going to come and read Genesis 41. So you don't have 40 printed, except for verse 8, which is important. But so listen along carefully to chapter 40, and then Amanda will come and read 41. Sometime after this, after Joseph was put in prison, the cupbearer of the king of Egypt and his baker committed an offense against their lord, the king of Egypt. And Pharaoh was angry with his two officers, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker. And he put them in custody in the house of the captain of the guard in the prison where Joseph was confined. The captain of the guard appointed Joseph to be with them, and he attended them. They continued for some time in his custody. And one night they both dreamed. The cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt, who were confined in prison, each had his own dream, each dream with its own interpretation. When Joseph came to them in the morning, he saw that they were troubled. So he asked Pharaoh's officers who were with him in custody in the master's house, "Why are your faces downcast today?" And they said, "We have had dreams, and there's no one to interpret them." Joseph said to them, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Please tell them to me." So the chief cupbearer told his dream to Joseph and said to him, "In my dream there was a vine before me, and on the vine there were three branches. As soon as it budded, its blossoms shot forth, and the clusters ripened into grapes. Pharaoh's cup was in my hand. I took the grapes and pressed them into Pharaoh's cup and placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand." Then Joseph said to him, "This is its interpretation. The three branches are 3 days. In 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your office, and you shall place Pharaoh's cup in his hand as formerly as you were his cupbearer. Only remember me when it's well with you, and please do me this kindness to mention to Pharaoh, so get me out of this house. For I was indeed stolen out of the land of the Hebrews, and here also I have done nothing that should put me into the pit." When the chief baker saw that the interpretation was favorable, he said to Joseph, "I also had a dream. There are 3 cake baskets on my head. In the uppermost basket there are all sorts of baked foods for Pharaoh, but the birds were eating it out of the basket on my head." Joseph said, "This is its interpretation. The three baskets are 3 days. In 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head from you and hang you on a tree. The birds will eat the flesh of you. On the 3rd day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, he made a feast for all of his servants and lifted up the head of the chief cupbearer and the head of the chief baker among the servants. He restored the chief cupbearer to his position, and he placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand. But he hanged the chief baker, as Joseph had interpreted to them. Yet the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him." So Amanda will come and read 41 for us. So the search for answers, the person of answers, and the message of answers. These three people, the cupbearer, the baker, and Pharaoh, are troubled by the situation. They have these dreams. They don't understand. But it says in 41, it says that, Pharaoh is troubled. In chapter 40, it says Joseph sees them, and he can see that they're distraught. They're at a place where they need answers, and it's not just their intellectual need for answers is spilling over to their emotions. They're being affected in their whole being by this need for answers, for this search for answers. And these people aren't just, it's not a normal situation for these three guys. These three people are successful, creative, bright, intellectual people, right? The chief cupbearer to Pharaoh is responsible from grape to glass for what Pharaoh drinks. And first of all, it's to make sure that Pharaoh doesn't get poisoned. But it's also, Pharaoh doesn't drink two-buck chuck. He probably wants something good. And so the poison might kill you rather quickly, but if you don't deliver the goods to Pharaoh in terms of nicely refined aged tannins and a Cabernet Meritage that's respectable, you're probably not going to keep your job very long either. But so of all the people in the whole country, this guy is the chief winemaker, the chief wine servant for Pharaoh. The baker, I mean, it takes a lot of work to make that nice rosemary, olive oil, sourdough baguette. But actually, the people that are into this kind of stuff dug through the records and found that there's like 38 kinds of cake in Egypt, and there's 57 kinds of bread. So this guy is like the chief artisan baker for the whole country. He's a bright, accomplished guy. And Pharaoh is this ruler of Egypt. Egypt is a vastly important country in the ancient Near East. It's the breadbasket of the whole environment. He might have gotten the job by nepotism, but still, he's considered a demigod. He's considered the god of the sun. So these people are successful, bright people, and yet they're deeply troubled by this dream that they've had. And they need some answers. They're looking for answers for it. On one hand, it's not a very normal situation, and yet it shouldn't really surprise us, right? Because in spite of how we normally try to kind of push life down, life is much more complex than we think, and we're really not quite as brilliant as our friends think we are, right? That life has a lot more questions to it than we allow to bubble up day to day. And so it's not surprising that for these guys, and even for us, that periodically things shoot up into our lives and they bring questions. They raise issues that aren't easily resolved, where we get troubled in mind and in heart, and we need to find answers. So what do they do? Well, they could have slept, but instead they searched, right? Pharaoh goes to his wise men. Pharaoh's got a retinue of wise men and magicians, and he says, "Tell me about this dream." And they're like, "We don't know. We can't give you any answers." So Pharaoh's concerned. He wants to get an answer. He's searching for an answer for his issue. These guys could have said, "You know what? Let's just forget about this. We're not going to die if we don't get the answer to these dreams. Let's just go back, watch some TV, have some good meals, bring some more of that good wine out." When we come to these places where we need answers, we can either search or we can sleep. Right? We can move and try to find an answer, or we can medicate. Now, in the 60s, they did medicated searching, but that we kind of dismissed that. But in American culture, there's a lot of encouragement just to medicate, not to grapple with the questions that bubble up and that kind of are growing in our mind and hearts. We've got TV, food, and drink, and shopping, and sports, and just the general pace of life. We have lots of things in the world, in our culture, that what keeps us from searching. But the baker and the cupbearer, and especially Pharaoh, they search. And I think that's a model for us. That's the right thing we're supposed to do. When we realize that life is more complicated than we thought it was, that to better understand it, we need to spend some time trying to figure out what's going on. There's a book, a famous book called The Moviegoer by Walker Percy, and it talks about a southern gentleman named this southern gentleman down in Louisiana, and he generally is living this kind of frivolous life, but all of a sudden he gets these existential urges to try to figure out what life is about, and he tries to satisfy them with by just ignoring them and covering over them, medicating them. He tries to do good deeds to figure out what's going on with them, but in the very end of the book, it's a step of faith into something that doesn't seem quite rational, that is the beginning of his redemption. And so it's to give attention to the existential is an important part of life. How do we end up searching? I think if it's a minor issue that we're looking for, we set the parameters for it. Right? We say, okay, I'm looking for an answer to my problem, and here's my answer should fit inside this nice little box. Right, I'm looking for an answer of this price and this style and from this direction. But it's when it's something that's big and momentous in our lives, that's when we need to say, you know what, I'm not going to set the parameters for what this answer is. I need to be open to what the answer is going to be. Because what's the answer that Joseph brings Pharaoh? Joseph brings Pharaoh an answer that's culturally difficult, religiously objectionable, personally almost offensive. Right? Pharaoh is the king of Egypt, and it's his kingdom is tied in with his own religious worship of God of the sun and all these different pantheon of gods. And Joseph brings an answer and says, no, the God of the Hebrews, the God of Israel is speaking to you in this dream. And he wants you to, he's revealing to you what's going to happen. Pharaoh's not in charge of your own country. God's in charge of what's going to happen. And the surprising thing is that Pharaoh believes him. Pharaoh responds. Pharaoh was distraught enough to say, your answer doesn't have to fit inside my little box for me to believe it. But he's willing to actually accept an answer could be a very hard thing for him to receive. But so obviously he was so troubled by his situation that he was open to a broader answer than what normally he would be. So that's the search for answers. I think it just raises a good question that when life gets complex, when our own kind of set ideas of how to make life fit and work together, when they're not adding up, that it's time to be open to kind of adopting a more searching for a more complex view of life. I watch more PBS Kids than I would normally choose to at this stage in life. But one of the things they always say is like, learn something new every day, right? I just hear that. So I think this is an opportunity. When life confronts us with things that our own systems don't answer, it's an opportunity to learn something new, to have an expanded, broadened view of the world we live in, and to find some greater existential understanding of it. So Pharaoh and the cupbearer and the baker are searching for answers. What kind of answers do they get? Well, first they get Joseph, a person of answers. And part of the answer is who Joseph actually is. I think that's part of the reason why they're able to hear his answer. And one of the first things you see is Joseph's compassion. In chapter 40, it says, when Joseph came to them in the morning, he saw that they were troubled. So remember, Joseph is a prisoner in Egypt, in one of the worst prisons in the country. Right, and yet he's not feeling sorry for himself. He's not despondent. He's not depressed about and self-pitying about his own situation. He actually is taking charge. He's even as a prisoner, he's contributing to the administration of the prison, and he has the place to see. Oh, here's these two new guys, and he sees them. They were troubled, and so he asks them, "Why are your faces so downcast?" Joseph is a person that even when he's in the worst place, he still has compassion for others. And I think that's part of what helps him, his answers become real and accessible and receivable. What else does he do? He's a person of conviction. I put verse 8 on your 40 verse 8 on your passage, on your bulletin, because it's important. He says, they say, we've had dreams and there's no one to interpret them. So they're without a source for information. Joseph says, do not interpretations belong to God? Joseph is a person of conviction. Right? He hasn't let the fact that he's a believer in God, but he's in prison, and he's been kidnapped, and he's been a servant, and now he's in prison, being framed, shake the fact that he still believes in God. And he believes that God is the one who interprets dreams, that God's the one that reveals himself and communicates. And part of that's because Joseph had dreams, and so he can connect to that. But he has the conviction that even in his current place, that God's at work, that God's available, that God answers dreams and questions. Another thing we see here is that I'll say Joseph is a good middleman, a good middle person. He says in verse 8, do not interpretations belong to God? Please tell them to me. I think that's an odd juxtaposition of phrases. God answers, God can tell you the interpretation of your dream, tell it to me. Right? I'm not going to come up with the answer, God is. But I'm putting myself as this intermediary, this middle person between you and God. I'm willing to put myself in that place to try to help you get your answer. It's really a difficult place Joseph puts himself, because he's now kind of he's the face of God to them, and yet he's got to be, he's like, well, God, I hope you're going to deliver. Like, I know that you can answer this, but all of a sudden I've interjected myself in this situation, and your problems have become my problems. Right? He's willing to take their problems on in order to help them get an answer. You know, there's a lot of middlemen, a lot of intermediaries in our everyday life, right? You can imagine most of the kind of intermediaries we have are the kind of people that if you and a farmer are bartering, or you have an agreement, I'll give you $2 a dozen for eggs. Right? That's a great deal. Most of the time in life, what happens is someone comes in the middle and says, "Hi, I got a better idea." Okay, to the farmer, you give me the eggs for $1, and I'll charge $3 to the other guy, and I'll make $2. Right? That's the middle taker. Right? They in our life, people inject themselves in the middle and they try to take something from both sides of the deal. As the mortgage crisis goes on and people do more research to figure out actually what happened, that's part of the reason why it got so bad. On This American Life, they hired an investigative group to look into this more, and they found that the CDO managers, the people that created these bad debt instruments, I mean, they got, each deal got paid $10 to $20 million in fees that went into at least half of it or so went into a fund that became the bonus pool. So the people that helped create these things had a personal benefit to keep them going, to keep creating them, because it meant they got a bigger bonus at the end of the year. So even though they're producing these toxic things that end up crashing the economy, they were a middle taker, right? Because they found a way that, I don't care what happens on either side of this deal, but as a middle person, as a middle man, I can get something for myself. But Joseph is a middle giver, right? He inserts himself in this situation so that he can give, so that he can, in this case, give God's answer, give God's understanding and blessing to this cupbearer and this baker. He chooses to insert himself in a place where he can be a benefit to them, and he takes responsibility on for himself. I think that's unique in terms of what we find mostly in our culture. And then he also acts on his answer. In chapter 40, verse 14, he says to the cupbearer, right, he's told the cupbearer, you're going to be restored to your position with Pharaoh. You're going to be doing the grape stuff again. He says, only remember me when it's well with you, please. Do me this kindness, mention me to Pharaoh, and get me out of this house. Right? This hasn't taken place yet. But Joseph believes the information he's giving the cupbearer, and he's acting on it. He's saying, this is going to happen to you, and when this does happen, remember me. He believes his own message. His word to them, he believes, is completely true, because he's saying, when this happens, remember me. Help me get out of this place. So it's true for the cupbearer, but it's also true for him personally and universally. The message, the medium does impact the message. I think who Joseph is a huge part of the message and the answers that he brings in this situation to the cupbearer and also to Pharaoh. Who he is in terms of his character, his practices, his beliefs, is an essential part of the message he brings. And so it raises the questions for us. If we're ones that want to bring a message of blessing to other people, are we a people of blessing ourselves? Right? So it's not enough to be this good intermediary, to have a good message, because who you are impacts the message, either positively or negatively. So being a person of a good message is essential to bringing a good message. And I think actually in terms of trying to bring answers and trying to bring good, beneficial answers to people that are searching, whether it's ourself, whether it's our family members, whether it's friends and neighbors, I think chapter 40, verse 8 is a great model. Do not interpretations belong to God? Please tell them to me. Anytime we're going to bring a good answer, try to bring a good answer to someone, there's personal risk involved. There's personal cost. There's putting ourselves into the situation. We don't just bring a pallet of good news and drop it off at the front doorstep. Joseph is intricating himself into the lives of these people in order to bring them this good message, this good answer. And so who we are becomes an essential part of whether we have a good message, a good word to share with others. And then what is the message itself? If you remember chapter 41 here, the word interpretation occurs all over the place. And in between these two chapters, it occurs 11 times. And if you think, Pharaoh had all these wise men. He had these magicians. And they couldn't come up with an interpretation, or they came up with them and Pharaoh said, nah, that's not right. The interpretation of the dream was the key issue. What's going on? And it wasn't just enough for Pharaoh to say, here's what I think it means. No, he's invested in this. I want to know really, truly what this dream means. This is an important dream to figure out, not just to say, pick an interpretation, any interpretation, right? In our day and age, oftentimes there's no one interpretation, we think. Oftentimes we say, you have this interpretation, I have that one. There's the Marxist interpretation, the feminist interpretation, the Southern interpretation, the California interpretation. So you can... But Pharaoh here, that won't do, right? Pharaoh wants, no, I want what's true. I want what's real. And you know, it's interesting, there's another story in the book of Daniel about a king like this who has a dream, and he has a bunch of magicians also. It's Nebuchadnezzar has these magicians, and he says, I've had this dream, I want you to tell me the meaning. And they're like, okay, tell us the dream. But he doesn't trust his magicians because he knows they're just going to come up with some crazy untrue story. So what he says is, no, I want you to tell me the dream and then tell me the interpretation. And they're like, okay, fine, just tell us the dream and we'll give you an interpretation. Because they're realizing, uh-oh, we are in trouble. So the whole question of, yeah, what's the real interpretation? Nebuchadnezzar says, I want the real interpretation. And in that case, God provided Daniel, who said, by God's wisdom and grace, he says, yeah, here's your dream and here's the meaning. And he's like, okay, you've got it then. If you can tell me the dream and the meaning, then you've got the answer. Pharaoh wants a true message, the true answer here. And when we're distraught, if we are having a personal issue, a question, life is throwing complexity at us, whether it's our stage in life, whether it's the illness or death of a friend or loved one near us, whether it's having children, whether it's trying to raise children at different ages, whatever the issues are that raise those need for real answers, and those things, those aren't theoretical, right? We want the real, true answer. And Joseph, in a sense, proves that he's bringing that real answer because his answer comes true for the cupbearer. But having true answers is important, and that's what Joseph brings. He also, Joseph brings a particular answer, right? A particular answer. He's a Jew. He's, even though he's in Egypt, right, he's a Hebrew, he's bringing a belief in who God is. And he's bringing it into this multicultural Egypt with different religious systems and different cultural values. But Joseph's, the best thing he can do is he brings his particular answer. He doesn't bring an answer that's politically correct for Egypt or contextualized. He contextualizes his life for Egypt, but he doesn't give up his beliefs for Egypt. Right? We see that later when he has his children. He names them Hebrew. He gives them Hebrew names. He has an Egyptian wife, but he gives them Hebrew names with Hebrew meanings to them. Joseph is a believer in Yahweh, the God of Israel, and his answer is God, the God of Israel, not your God, but the God, not your son God over here, but the God of Israel is telling you what's going to happen, what's happening in this situation and how you need to prepare for it. So he brings a particular, precise, not relativistic, but absolute answer. He also brings a complete answer. If you look at verse 32, he says, and the doubling of Pharaoh's dream means that the thing is fixed by God, and God will shortly bring it about. Now therefore, let Pharaoh select a discerning and wise man and set him over the land of Egypt. And let him appoint overseers and take a fifth of the produce and save it for the famine years. Joseph is saying, God is going to do something, and now you need to do something. So there's in his answer, there's no tension between God's in control in this world, and God does, by his own desire, he's doing certain things, and yet we're responsible and we need to act. So there's no tension between what we would call God's sovereignty, or God as the king who gets to do anything he wants to do, according to his character. There's no tension between God acting as king, and yet humans also needing to respond to that and act. Right? In some circles of Christianity, people say, "Well, God's in charge of everything, and so we everything is predestined. We can just sit back and relax, and nothing's and let it all go." Because it's fatalistic. And in other avenues, we think, well, God's kind of in charge, but not really. So we better grab hold of everything and start running ourselves because we're not sure what's going to happen. But Joseph's answer here upholds both that God is the king who sovereignly decides what will happen according to his good character, but also that humans are called to respond, right? That Pharaoh needs to respond to deal with this situation. And then lastly, this message, this answer that Joseph brings is gracious. This is really, this dream, this whole thing of God reaching out to Pharaoh, it's not a dream of judgment. It's not a message of judgment. It's a message of grace. It's a message of God providing a warning of what's going to happen. Of saying, you know what, these people don't know what's going to happen. I need to let them know what's going to happen so that they don't get overwhelmed by it, so they don't get decimated and destroyed by it. Egypt was the breadbasket of the ancient Near East. It was a very fertile plain between two deserts, and rarely were there famines there. And if there's famines elsewhere, there's no water in where Israel were, then they'd go to Egypt because Egypt almost always had lots of produce. But here's a situation where Egypt and the surrounding areas are all in a drought, and there's a famine, and there's not enough production of food. And there's records of at least two famines like that occurred in Egypt's history, and they were so severe there was cannibalism going on and things like that. But so God is intervening to make sure that Pharaoh knows what's going to happen so that his country doesn't get decimated. So that, as in the other famines, so that half the country doesn't die off. And so God graciously is bringing this dream to say, here's what's happening, you need to respond. It's really a model of God's gracious character to bring information that Pharaoh needs but that he doesn't have. And so, in that sense, it's really a message of grace. It's a message of God's mercy to Pharaoh. It also helps God's, it's also part of God revealing himself, of saying, you know, people say you're in charge, you're the Pharaoh, you're the demigod of the whole area, but actually I'm in charge, I'm the one that's going to bring this famine, and I'm going to tell you about it. And I'm going to provide the person even to rescue you from that famine, Joseph. So when you bring a message to your friends or neighbors or your spouse, right? Say your friends or neighbor, your spouse is in some turmoil, what kind of message do you usually bring? You'll notice the message here from God, it isn't at all about do good. Right? It isn't like shape up, Pharaoh, you better shape up your ways, I don't like how you're acting. You better be better, and then I'll bless you. That's not at all what God is saying. It's a message of grace. It's not a message of moralism or you need to act better, and then I'll bless you. When we give answers, what kind of answers do we end up giving? How kind of moralistic are they? Are they like, well, you know, if you would just have done this, then things would have gone much better? Or are they, no, you know what, this is what's happening. Or is it bringing information into someone's life, a gracious information that they need in order to respond to the situation? Ultimately, so God provides this message. God provides a dream, God provides a message, God provides Joseph the person. And in a lot of ways, what we see here in Joseph is he's the ideal person to come and help the situation, because he's merciful, right? He sees the situation that the cupbearer and the baker are in. In spite of being in hardship, he's merciful. And he brings a true message, right? One that's proven true through the cupbearer. And Pharaoh receives this message as true and responds to it. And then also he's one that can bring order and administer the situation. In biblical language, we talk about prophets, priests, and king. We see all three of those coming together here in Joseph. The priest is the merciful one who comes alongside, who puts himself into the situation to bless the two parties. The prophet is the one who comes and brings a word that's true, that you can count on, that brings insight. And the king is the one that brings order and peace to bear in the situation. And that's what, so we see those three occur all in Joseph, and we see those occur at different people. In the Bible, we see different priests and prophets and kings. But ultimately, the Bible's not about being good. The Bible's about God is good. And God is so good that he's worthy of our worship, and God is so good that compared to him, we are not good enough to be with him. And so God provides the one that Joseph points to, the perfect prophet, priest, and king, his son Jesus, who is the perfect merciful one, who has great mercy to put himself in between us and God, who says, I'll go and be incarnate as a human being, and I'll mediate between God and humanity so that they might be with you. with you, God. So, and I'm the true prophet. I bring the true word to humanity that you are good and gracious, but that you are so good that you're worthy of praise, and that we've turned away from you. We've not given you the praise you deserve. And so Jesus brings the true message of grace. And then Jesus is the perfect king who orders our lives, who brings good things to us, that walks with us through difficult times. And so Joseph is the perfect prophet, priest, and king that points to the perfect prophet, priest, and king. So we all naturally will be in times where we will have questions and needs that arise, and it's up to us how we respond to them. But this passage is showing us that God calls us to respond to them, to search and to seek, and that God is the one who, in his Son Jesus, does bring a perfect message for us to help us understand life and to walk with him and to come about through our challenges and difficulties. So let's pray together, and then we'll think about how, we'll remember how Jesus offers himself and wants us to remember him. Lord, we praise you for providing so much in this story, that God, it was your gracious choice to provide the dreams to Pharaoh and the cupbearer and the baker. It was your gracious gift to provide the answer to the dreams in the person of Joseph, and then even to provide the answer of the Joseph as the administrator, to preserve Egypt and not to let it be attacked and plundered. Lord, thank you that you are the one that provides for us, that your key message and key word to us is not that we need to be good in order to earn your favor, but that you are good, that you are so good that we can only understand the shadowy outside curvatures of that, of your goodness. Lord, help us to see that you're good. Help us to see that your mercy desires that we would be able to be with you and experience your goodness face to face, and that you've done that by giving Jesus your Son, the perfect prophet, priest, and king, to reveal yourself to us. Thank you, Father, in Jesus' name. Amen.